Good morning. I would like to call to order the October 6th, 2021 meeting of the TPA's Technical Advisory Committee. The Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting both in person and virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. Instruction to join the virtual meeting as well as contact information for assistance are provided in the published meeting agenda. Staff, please call the roll so that we can establish a quorum.
I want to remind the in-person attendees to hit the button on your base to unmute your microphone. And when it's red at the top, it means you're unmuted. And then for those that are attending virtually, if you can unmute when I call your name. And the alternates, please state your name if you're attending on behalf of a representative. Jim Bell.
Here.
Maria Tahara.
Here.
Gary Dunmire.
Here.
Richard Pereira. Richard, I have that you've joined the meeting, but I didn't hear you verbally. Kenny Wilson.
Here.
Thomas Driscoll.
CJ on behalf.
Jamie Brown.
Here.
Natalie Crowley.
Mike Morrow for Natalie.
Kim Glass Castro.
Idam is on behalf of Kim.
Gary Sipek.
Will Hicks for Gary Sipek.
Brian Davis.
Present.
Levi McCollum.
Anna Bielaska for Levi McCollum.
Aaron Hoffman.
Here.
Terrence Bailey. Terrence, I have that you've joined the meeting, but I can't hear you virtually. Christopher Marsh.
Here.
Joyce Kai.
Here.
Lorraine Cargill.
Vicki Gatanis for Lorraine Cargill.
Thank you. Kim Delaney.
Here.
Michael O'Dell. Alex Hansen.
Here.
Kevin Volbrick.
Christine. On behalf of Kevin Volbrick.
Thank you, Christine. John Crane.
Here.
Mortis Amalturk.
Yes.
Kara Ferris.
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Staff, are there any modifications to the agenda?
No, Madam Chair.
Moving on, are there any changes to the minutes? If not, may I have a motion to adopt the minutes as presented?
I move to adopt.
Second.
Alex, second.
I have a motion by Maria Tahara and a second by Mike Morrow. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Thank you. Moving on to general public comments and public comments on agenda items. As a reminder, there are three ways to provide public comment for this meeting. Written comments may be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments may be made by a virtual attendee using the raise hand function in the Zoom platform. Verbal and written comments may be provided by an in-person attendee submitting a comment card available at the welcome table. Staff, have any general comments been received?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Moving on to comments from the chair and member comments. I don't have any comments at this time. Now I'd like to invite any TAC members' comments on items not already on the agenda. For members participating remotely, please utilize the raise hand feature in the Zoom platform. And then remember to unmute your microphone once you are recognized.
I have John Crane with his hand raised.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I just wanted to understand whether or not our work program people were going to be able to present during that agenda item. I didn't see us specifically on the agenda.
Yes, the work program is information item. Is 2A. One too many items this month, you guys. Bear with me. Is 2D. So my staff will start the presentation and then work program staff will be able to present following.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other raised hands?
I do not see any others.
Okay, thank you. Next is the TAC liaison report. I'd like to invite Connor to provide an update.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, everyone. I apologize, I'm not able to join you in person today, but I do have a few items that I wanted to highlight from the liaison report. So first, the TPA has received 12 out of 47 completed media release forms from committee members. This form will assist TPA in creating photos and video highlights of work and accomplishments from board and committee members outside of scheduled meetings. The form can be downloaded from palmbeachtpa.org/media-release-forms and emailed back to Margie Pierce at mpierce@palmbeachtpa.org. The TPA has also received 38 out of 47 responses for the committee member census. This demographic data will assist the TPA in tracking committee diversity in accordance with state statute. To take the survey, please visit palmbeachtpa.org/TPA-committee-census. FDOT will be holding a public hearing for the upcoming work program, which includes proposed projects within District 4 over the next 5 years. The meeting will take place on October 19th at 6:30 p.m. With virtual and in-person options available. To register, please visit the link in the liaison report. The TPA has completed a report of COVID-19 impacts on transportation and potential actions to become more adaptable during similar pandemics. This report can be viewed at palmbeachtpa.org/COVID-19. And TPA staff will actually be providing a summary presentation in December. And those are the items that I wanted to highlight today. If you're interested in the full report, it is available in the backup for this meeting. And that is all I have this morning, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Connor. Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Do any committee members have any comments or questions on the liaison report? Any raised hands?
No, I have none.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving on to action items. The first is a motion to recommend adoption of amendment number 2 to the TPA's fiscal year FY22-26 transportation improvement program. I'd like to invite Jason Price, TPA TIP coordinator, to present this item.
Good morning, everyone. Today, I'll present to you amendment number 2 to the Transportation Improvement Program for fiscal year 22 through 26. If you recall, the first amendment was the roll forward amendment brought to you in previous months. This particular amendment is an action item and will require a vote at the end of the presentation and the discussion. And just as a quick reminder, why a TIP amendment is required, and that is if a project is either added or deleted from the TIP amendment, as well as if the cost increase is more than 20% or is over $2 million, or there's a change in the scope, which includes a change in the length of the project of a half mile and 20% of the project cost, or the number of through lanes is changed. Let's see. The last part is The only project that is impacted by this amendment is the project listed as part of this amendment. And although there's a number of other projects within the TIP document, the only project that would be altered within the document itself is the project being listed here today.
Could you advance those slides?
So this is the project before you for consideration. The project here is for the Northmoor neighborhood. It's various locations within the Northmoor neighborhood, and these are all the construction of sidewalks throughout this neighborhood. And the nature of the change is to incorporate two segments within this neighborhood that were not a part of, that were omitted from the original scope of the project. And so by this amendment, they're revising the scope to include these two streets. And the specifics of this is Greenwood Avenue from 39th Court to 45th Street and 39th Court from Windsor Avenue to Greenwood Avenue. And so this amendment would bring these two segments within the scope of the project that was originally intended. And with that, that's the conclusion of the presentation, and I'll take any questions at this time, and we're looking for a motion to recommend adoption of Amendment 2.
Thank you, Jason. Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, I need a motion to recommend adoption of Amendment Number 2 to the TPA's fiscal year 22-26 TIP, and then I will open the floor to discussion.
I move to adopt Amendment 2.
Second.
Who was the first?
I had a first by Vicki Gatanis and a second. I heard Alex's voice the loudest.
Okay. Do we have any hands raised?
I have Maria Tahara with her hand raised, and then no cards in person.
Okay, Maria?
Yes, I just want to know, what is the increase to the, was that in the presentation? I'm sorry if I overlook it. I mean, do we know what the increase is between what was adopted? Okay, what is the increase?
So with the inclusion of the additional length of the project, which went from about almost 1.5 miles to 2 miles, so it was over a half mile increase, and I see that there's about $3,000 in design funds or PE funds that was included as part of this change. I didn't get specifics on why there was a slight increase in the amount, but I would suggest that it was probably because these were overlooked, that they had to spend some design funds to incorporate these two small segments within the overall scope of the project, because I don't see additional construction funds. So I think they were accounted for, but it was an administrative error of not including these particular two segments as part of the project.
Okay. Because I was looking at it and I thought it was the same. Okay. And the reason why it has to be approved is because the length has increased, because it's only $3,000.
Right. So of the list of why amendments need to be brought forward is because there's a change to the scope of work where the length is changed by a half mile and 20% of the project. So they included about a half mile within the scope of the project that was originally supposed to be there.
Okay.
And so because of that, that triggers the requirement for an amendment.
Okay. That was, yeah. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Any other raised hands?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Hearing no further discussion, I have a motion by Vicki Gatanis and a second by Alex Hansen. We're going to do this vote by roll call. Margie, please call the roll.
So the motion on the floor is to recommend adoption of Amendment Number 2 to the TPA's fiscal year 22-26 TIP as presented. Before I call the roll, I just want to remind you to unmute your microphone so that your attendance can be counted. And then please respond by saying either yes or no when I call your name. Jim Bell?
Yes.
Maria Tahara?
Yes.
Jerry Dunmeyer?
Yes.
Richard Pereira?
Yes.
Kenny Wilson?
Yes.
Changjin Lin?
Yes.
Jamie Brown?
Yes.
Michael Mara?
Yes.
Aramis Cabrera?
Yes.
Will Hicks?
Yes.
Brian Davis?
Yes.
Anna Bielowska?
Yes.
Aaron Hoffman?
Yes.
Terrence Bailey?
Yes.
Christopher Marsh?
Yes.
Joyce Kai?
Yes.
Vicky Gatanis?
Yes.
Kim Delaney?
Sorry, yes.
Apologies. Patrick Bartholomew?
Yes.
Alex Hansen?
Yes.
Christine Perdomo?
Yes.
Modus Amalturk?
Yes.
Kara Ferris?
Yes.
It passes unanimously, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Moving on to 2B, motion to recommend adoption of a resolution affirming TPA support for the Atlantic Avenue widening project from Florida's Turnpike to Jog Road. I'd like to invite Thuc Le, is that right? FDOT project manager to introduce this item.
Good morning, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you the State Road 806. Six, Atlantic Avenue PD Need Study, a TPA priority project. Hi, my name is Thuc Le, and I'm with the Florida Department of Transportation, so I'm the project manager for this project. Along with me is Mr. John Scalato, a design consultant. He will have a presentation for you to go over the project overview and additional typical sections that resulted from the feedback received from the TPA board meetings on June 17 of this year. So with that, John, the floor is yours, mister, for the presentation to the committee.
Yes, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, and I'll just say next slide when we're ready to go to the next one and you can just flip through.
Okay. So
thank you everybody for joining. This is for the Atlantic Avenue PD&E study. The segment from Turnpike to Jog Road will be giving this same presentation this afternoon to the CAC as well as the BPTAC tomorrow, and a TPA board presentation will be given on October 21st. Next slide, please. So we're here to give an overview of the project as well as a status update since we last presented. The typical sections that we had previously shown to the TPA board, that was on June 17th, as Thuc mentioned. Since then, we had held an alternatives public workshop, which was on June 28th and 29th that we want to talk about, as well as the input that we had received from the TPA board and the workshop for us to look at some new typical sections based on physical separation for bicycle lanes. Next slide. So this is the study limits of the project. As I mentioned, it's from the Turnpike to Jog Road. It's all within unincorporated Palm Beach County. We're looking to widen from 4 to 6 lanes with upgrading bicycle and ped features. The project length is approximately 1.8 miles in length. Existing right-of-way varies from 113 to 175 feet. The context classification that we're designing for is a C3C suburban commercial. This is an urban principal arterial with a posted speed limit of 45 miles per hour. Next slide. So this was the typical section that we originally presented back in June to the TPA board as well as the TAC, which is for 6 lanes divided with 22-foot median, 11-foot lanes, 7-foot buffered bicycle lanes, 10-foot sidewalk on the south side and an 8-foot sidewalk on the north side. There's also a guardrail on the south side just to protect from the canal, which is located on the south, which is the L34 canal. One thing I want to point out is right-of-way acquisition will be needed on this typical section for on both sides. From Lake Worth Drainage District, they're requiring or 75 foot to be maintained for the right-of-way. So in this, with this typical section from Eagle Point to Legends Way, that would be our tightest area where we'd likely be needing to box the canal, as well as a small section near Michelangelo Boulevard for about 370 feet or so. Next typical, please. So this is the next section from Cumberland to Jog Road. There's a ditch on the south side on this within this segment. So we would be looking to pipe that ditch, and we are coordinating with Lake Worth Drainage District, and they are okay with us doing that within this section. So the typical section elements are still the same as the previous one. It's really just how we treat the right-of-way acquisition here on the south side where we don't have the canal. We're now just having the ditch. Next typical. So some of the feedback that we received from the TPA board was to look at wider pathways or potential shared use paths on both sides and physical separation of bike lanes along the corridor. Next slide. So following the TPA board meeting, as I mentioned, we held a public workshop. One was using the GoTo platform on June 28th and then in person on June 29th. Some of the key feedback that we obtained from those meetings was some concerns regarding noise with additional traffic or added lanes, impacts to driveways on the south side where we have some of the community entrances, as well as some U-turns and access at Eagle Point where the residents feel that it's kind of difficult to get into the neighborhood with vehicles that are coming in, making U-turns and so forth. But one of the key things I do want to highlight is the physical separated bike lanes that was requested from Commissioner Sachs. And that's kind of in line with some of the feedback, as I mentioned, from the TPA board. Next slide. So going and taking a look at some of the ideas that we came up with, and we coordinated this with some of the TPA staff and we felt was typicals that we could present. This is the first one. This is having shared use paths on both sides of the corridor. You'll notice there are no on-street bike lanes on this. So all bicyclists and pedestrians would be using the shared use paths on both sides. We're looking at 12-foot shared use paths, and the design standards also include a 4-foot clear area on the front and back of these shared use paths. And we also have a 2-foot utility strip behind that. So here you'll see we've looked at what this would entail in terms of maintaining the 75-foot constant right-of-way requirement from Lake Worth Drainage District that they're requesting. If we were to just maintain the full 75 feet, we would need anywhere up to 26 feet of additional right-of-way on the south side of the canal, which would be inside private property. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the slides to come. This typical section would be about 138 foot for the main line for Atlantic Avenue with the 12 foot shared use paths. And this, I just wanna add, this is focusing strictly on the section from Turnpike to Cumberland Drive. Next slide. So the next typical section that we looked at is physically separated bicycle lanes. So here what we do is we have a 3-foot buffer between the outside travel lane and the bicycle lane. And within that 3-foot buffer, there's a 2-foot physical raised separation. And that way, that's going to provide some of that physical separation for vehicles if they're traveling. There's going to be something that they would bump into without going into the bicycle lane. So that's a 3-foot buffer. 2 foot of that is physically raised, and you would have a 6-foot bicycle lane. This is on both sides of the corridor. And in addition, we would include 10-foot sidewalks on both sides as well. The canal would be similar to the previous one if we were to hold a 75-foot right-of-way width for the canal. For this typical, we'd be looking up to 22 feet. So it's a little bit less than the previous one. We're now at 134 foot overall typical section. Next slide. So this is similar to the first one we presented. This is still having the shared use paths on both sides, but we were able to reduce the width for the canal by putting a sheet pile wall along the north side of the canal. So that 75 foot width that we had before, which included a 10 foot maintenance berm on the north side of the canal, we were able to eliminate that and reduce the width of the canal by a couple of feet. So overall, we took the 75 down to 63, and that now reduces the impacts that we would have on the south side into some of the private properties up to 14 feet. But the rest of the typical section elements would be the same as the first one, where we have the shared use paths. These are 12 feet on both sides and no on-street bicycle lanes. Next slide. So these are some of the mainline typical section challenges associated with some of these concepts. Obviously, additional right-of-way. We're looking up to 4 to 8 feet more based compared to the first the original concept we prepared or presented back in June. Potential impacts to some of the privacy walls and landscape buffers on the south side between the canal and the private property. Potential impacts to the golf course, as well as Woodstock habitat and mitigation would be potentially needed if portions of the canal are piped in order for us to avoid reduce the 75 foot requirement. Potential increased impacts to the Kings Point Shopping Center, that's over at Jog Road, which would also include parking impacts at Walgreens, and some increased residential impacts between Cumberland Drive and Jog Road as well, which would be generally on the north side. Next slide. So this is a critical area that we're focusing on here, which is between Eagle Point and Legends Way. This is the tightest section within the corridor regarding right-of-way. What we're showing here are these various impact lines, assuming we were to maintain a full 75-foot right-of-way width for the canal. Now, we have been coordinating with Lakewood Drainage District for this section, and we are trying to get approval from them right now to end up piping this section. So contingent upon that approval, if we do get that approved by Lake Worth, the impacts that we're showing here would end up going away. We would just pipe the section. It would be less than 75 foot for the canal, and these issues would go away. Otherwise, these would be the associated impacts for each of the alternatives that we just presented to you. The shared use paths, which was the first concept that we showed, would be the worst one. As you would see here, we would be encroaching on some of the homes and patios and so forth in the Eagle Point community. Next slide. So this is a summary of some of the right-of-way challenges that we have. So the top table that you see is the concept that we presented back in June. As I mentioned, the Eagle Point to Legends Way, you'll notice there's areas within that segment that we fall below the 75 foot request from Lake Worth Drainage District, as all the way down to 55 feet, with it's typically around 62. So that's the area that we're looking to box that area in order to avoid having those impacts that we've just shown on the previous slide, as well as the short segment between Legends Way and Michelangelo Boulevard that I mentioned earlier, that was about 370 feet that we would look to pipe the section. So the table on the bottom left is what we would have regarding the shared use paths. You'll notice almost the entire segment from the E2E bridge to Cumberland is now going to be below the 75 foot requirement from Lake Worth Drainage District. That means that they would have to approve piping all of these sections that we're showing here in orange, in order for us to avoid having those impacts on the south side that we discussed earlier in the previous slides, which would be inside the private property. So not just Eagle Point to Legends Way, which is the first portion, which we were looking at doing, but it would be almost the entire segment we would need approval for. And the bottom right table is for the physically separated bicycle lanes. Obviously, again, Eagle Point to Legends Way, that's still going to be as we had originally. Same with Legends Way to Michelangelo, that short segment. But now we've also have one more section that would just barely fall below the 75-foot requirement, which is from the E2E bridge to Lexington. You'll notice we're about 72-plus to 73-plus feet, so just shy of the 75-foot, but we would have to have that approved by Lake Worth Drainage District to avoid any of those impacts on the south side. Next slide. So this is some additional challenges we would have at the turnpike. If we are to move forward with any of these new typical sections, some of the key things to point out here is additional widening that would be needed for the bridges. So the first one would be the E2E canal. Our previous concept, we were widening some on this bridge on the south side. So it would require further widening on the south side. And the north side of the bridge was recently widened to accommodate future the turn lanes for right turn lane, as well as adding the through lane at this location. So we would have to widen again that bridge on the north side. On the E2W canal, these two bridges, we originally were just going to be striping through here, so there wasn't going to be any widening of the bridge. But with any of these new alternatives, we would have to look at widening both of these bridges, as well as the associated utility relocations, as well as some coordination and approvals from FGT as we would be widening over the FGT line. So overall, there are no fatal flaws with this, but the key thing to consider is there's going to be a lot of additional costs. So the funding is really the key issue with the additional work that will be done through the turnpike with one of these new typicals. Next slide. So this is kind of a comparison of all of the various alternatives. The no build alternative is something that we still carry forward as an option in the PD&E study. The 7-foot buffered bicycle lanes, that's what we presented back in June. You'll notice there's a lot of, excuse me, a lot of improvements here for vehicle safety, traffic flow, as well as access. And these are all being compared kind of alternative to alternative. So you'll see a lot of yellow dots on the 7-foot buffered bicycle lanes, construction costs and so forth. And as far as costs go, we would be the most would be the sheet pile wall. Putting those walls would be very costly. So that would be our most expensive option. As far as bike ped safety, any of these new three alternatives we feel would be the safest for bike peds. Even under the original alternative, it would be better than what's out there today in terms of bike ped safety, but the three new options we have presented will enhance that even further. But there are more associated right-of-way impacts with those alternatives, as well as utilities and so forth. Next slide, please. So the jog road intersection, this was something that we had presented three alternatives back in June. The partial displaced left turns, this was the alternative that we showed that would achieve acceptable level of service in the design year 2045. With further coordination with the TPA staff, as well as internally with the department, this concept wasn't supported due to the following reasons: additional right-of-way impacts, multiple access issues that are associated with it, pedestrian safety concerns, as well as this just being an unconventional type intersection for Florida. It would violate drivers' expectations, as people are not very familiar with this type of configuration. So with that, we would still be evaluating two other alternatives. That would be the maintaining the existing dual left turns that are out there today, or expanding the intersection with triple left turns. But we just want to point out that neither of those alternatives will meet the acceptable level of service in the design year 2045. Next slide. So this is our timeline, our funding. Project initiated back in 2020 in February. The schedule that you see here is based on what we originally planned for completion in the summer. With the change in these typical sections, based on what's selected, we're going to have to go back and do some additional analysis So we anticipate some shifting of this schedule to extend out a few months. We're still gonna do our best to target a completion date of summer of 2022, but there could be some additional months needed based on some of the changes for this newly selected typical section. And with that, there could be some shifts in the phasing that you see here for the future phases. The design year is fiscally or funded for fiscal year 2022. As you notice, construction is still not funded, but a candidate project for fiscal year 2027. Next slide. And with that, Tukin I, as well as Rudy Gottmari, the consultant project manager, we're all here to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. I do see a raised hand, but we need a motion first.
Yes, if you want to do a motion first, if they want to do discussion first, it's okay.
Okay.
I would like to make a motion to approve.
Okay.
Second.
What is it that we're approving?
So I do have Alex and Mo with their hands raised. I also actually do have a public comment that just raised their hand, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay.
If you want to take that one.
All right, let's start with the public comment first.
Okay, Khursheed, I do have your hand raised and it is probably asking you to unmute on your end and then you'll have 3 minutes. Khursheed, are you able to unmute?
Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can. Thank you.
Okay. When all dust settles and there is a final cost section chosen, at that time there will be a need for coordination between TPA, DOT, and us to modify our thoroughfare right of way identification map, TE14.1, which currently shows, I believe, only about 120 feet in that section. Then we'll have to modify that. We have done it different ways. Sometimes we do it after the construction is done just to reflect the, make it as a corrective amendment. And sometimes we can do it before, whatever the need is determined, but we will coordinate with DOT on that item. That's it.
Okay. And I did forget to ask, Madam Chair, my apologies. It's been a while since we've had a public comment, but Khursheed is from Palm Beach County Planning.
Khursheed Mahiuddin with Palm Beach County Planning.
Thank you, Khursheed. And so I do have Alex and Mo with their hands raised.
Okay, let's start with Alex.
Yeah, I want to verify the motion that was made. What is the motion for? Because the presentation included a couple of alternatives. So I just first want to be clear on what the motion is. I am concerned of any design that does not include on-street bicycle facilities in this area or most roads. There's a number of cyclists that use this road. There's groups of cyclists riding this road regularly. And to now assume that just because we have a what we call a multi-purpose facility, which in some instances actually is the same width as the facility that would be built with on-street bicycle lanes, I think is a little bit naive. Many cyclists are still going to be using the road to ride, so we need to provide facilities for those cyclists, especially in a road that has a design or posted speed of 45 miles per hour. So I cannot support any option that does not include some type of on-street bicycle facility. We can get into a debate as to whether it should be the physically separated alternative that is now presented, or even going back to the original option that had the buffered bike lane. We can have that discussion. I want to point out that even the options that, again, remove on-street bicycle facilities and then have what is called a multi-purpose facility, are only widening that facility by a couple of feet, 2, 3, 4 feet. So the benefit for the off-street facility is not that significant. And in return, we're removing on-street bicycle facilities in order to get that minimal benefit off-street. So it is a concern that I have. I cannot support an option that removes on-street bicycle facilities from this road. I also went back to some of the conversations that this committee had and also that the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee had, I believe was last June. And I did not see any directive from these committees to remove on-street bicycle facilities. There was a lot of discussion as to what the ideal cross-section should be. There seemed to be some consensus about concerns about the intersection and some of the proposals that were being included. I know there were a lot of concern from committee members, from this committee as well as the BTPAC about that. But I did not hear any direction or any recommendation to remove on-street bike facilities at that time.
So, Madam Chair, if it's all right, I'd like to answer that question.
Yeah, should we clarify the motion first? Because there is a resolution in the package. And I assume, Maria, your motion was to support the resolution?
To be honest with you, my motion was just a motion so that we could start discussing this presentation. And that's the reason why I made the motion. I do have questions about it, so.
Okay. Sure, and I can help clarify the motion that's on the floor right now. So, so the motion is just to support the project itself. DOT and their consultants are still going through the PD&E process, and they're still looking at different alternatives. The reason why you're seeing an alternative with multi-use path without on-street bike lanes is because one of the directives from the board was to investigate either protected or completely separated bike and pedestrian facilities for the corridor. And as you can tell with the presentation, certain situations, if you wanted to include both a on-street bike lane and a multi-use path so that bicyclists will have either the option of riding on the road or on the multi-use path, the right-of-way impacts would be pretty large. So I think what DOT was looking at was just providing an alternative where it's low right-of-way impacts, but still providing that protected slash separated bike facility. I think, and this was, again, it was kind of a directive from the board itself. So they wanted DOT to kind of investigate that. But as far as the resolution, it's simply supporting DOT moving forward with, this project and those alternatives. There's still going to be a lot of coordination moving forward, though. So you can go.
I'm sorry, can I respond to that since I...
Go ahead, Alex.
Can I respond to that?
Alex, did you have a response?
Yeah, I just want to point out, I mean, we're looking at the resolution right now on Section 2A mentions the provision of off-road shared use pathways of at least 10 feet in width in lieu of an on-street bicycle lane. So if we approve this resolution, we are saying we do not want on-street bicycle facilities. I think it's pretty clear. So that's why I am very concerned. And again, when I saw this in the agenda, I expressed my concern. I cannot support something in which we're saying, let's remove on-street bicycle lanes. And this section of the resolution, to me, very clearly states that.
Okay. And I guess maybe this is a question for Margie. Would it be okay if there was language added, or does the resolution have to move forward or not move forward as is? The reason why I ask is maybe we could have some language included in there stating that, would still like to pursue on-street bike lanes or something along those lines.
If it's the desire of the committee to revise the proposed resolution, we can do that. And I can pick open another version for you to make edits to, and we could provide that information to the board. I do have a few other hands raised.
Okay. All right, we'll go. We'll come back to this, Alex, but we'll move on to Mo.
Okay, so I have Mo, Maria, and John.
Good morning, everybody. It's a lengthy discussion. Actually, I have several points here to discuss. One thing is, I'm concerned with the proposed alternative that would not provide shoulders with the shared use path, where they are eliminating the on-street bike lanes. They are eliminating the shoulder. Typically, the on-street bike lane serves as a shoulder as well. And I'm concerned with having a major roadway with design speed of 45 miles per hour, six lanes without shoulder. That's one. Secondly, regarding the on-street bike lanes and their use and the bicyclists using this corridor frequently, I agree that, you know, what the serious bikers would rather be on the street and they will not be on the sidewalk. But at the same time, we have to understand that we don't build our roads and facilities only to cater to one group without ignoring the other groups that need to use bikers. Most of the other bikers would never use the on-street bike lane on a major facility like this one. They would go on the sidewalk anyway, even if you do not provide a shared pathway. So we need to probably think out of the box here and understand that our concerns about having on-street bike lanes is focused on the peak hour probably conditions, where you have the road very busy and you have high speeds. I personally don't think that it's smart or right to allow anybody to be on a bike on the street during those periods. However, during other periods, the bikers that like to be on the street could use, and the state statute allows them to use a vehicular lane, and they can do that. And if I understand it right, those bikers don't go out during peak hours. They tend to be on those streets and those roads during weekends or holidays, and or during the weekdays, probably they are out there during the off-peak hours. So there could be an arrangement done whereby we do not provide on-street bike lanes and maybe put signing, pavement marking or whatever to designate the outside lane, vehicular lane, for use by bikers outside of peak hours or something to that extent. So I personally don't believe it's a good idea, safe idea, to allow or put even on-street bike lanes on major roadways with multiple lanes, high volumes and high speeds. It's not safe, it's not right. Even if it were, we are not talking about safety alone, you know, from, you know, collision or conflict between vehicles and bicyclists. It's simply those shoulders, those bike lanes end up being accumulating all the debris from the road. And I know several of my friends who are serious bikers who got into accidents because of that. So these are the two points. The other thing, I have a question for John and his team about the width of the cross sections that we were presenting. I believe the original one that they came to us with last time had 130-foot width. With the shared use, they are showing 138. I have not done the math to add up, you know, the cross section, but it seems to me that we are eliminating a 7-foot bike lane and we are adding only 2 feet to the sidewalk on the south side, which was 10 feet, and adding 4 feet to the one on the north side only. So we should not be needing 8 more feet. The rest of the elements are the same, the number of lanes and the width of lanes and the median, et cetera. So if they could help us, you know, understand that, that would be nice. The other thing I want to point out is that the alternative that is being proposed now has adverse environmental impacts. And I remember that on that chart, it had a strong dark red dot for that alternative for the environmental impact. And we need to remember that. The thing that truly, truly concerns me is the push to get away with the new, nice, good, innovative way of improving traffic operation at the intersection of Atlantic and Jug Road. And it seems like, you know, this partially displaced left turn concept had been severely attacked unfairly. I think we are doing ourselves and the people of Delray Beach a huge disadvantage by, you know, trying to kill that concept and that's that design. The issues that were brought up last time, and unfortunately we were not able to point it out, about concerns with impacts on private property and protecting private property, as if, you know, private property is taken for free. It's not. You know, when any property, private property taken, they usually, the owners do well with that. They usually get compensated at higher than fair market value for their property. So, and they go through the due process, and if they have to be condemned, they go before judge, and their rights and more than their rights are preserved and compensated, et cetera. So that should not be an issue that we bring up as an excuse to kill an otherwise great project, great design. That's one. Secondly, I heard that there are issues and concerns with adverse impacts on the safety of pedestrians and bicyclists with the partially displaced left turn. I don't think this is an accurate statement either. With the they mentioned the free flow right turn lane would make it a little bit more dangerous for pedestrians to cross. Actually, that's not true. It makes it more safe. It's safer because then you can put a pedestrian signal for pedestrians to cross that free flow travel lane. And we have done this just outside of our offices here at the intersection of Jug Road and Okeechobee Boulevard, which was liked a lot by FDOT and was replicated in many other locations in the county, including SR80 at Forest Hill. So we need to remember that other alternatives, if we kill this partially displayed left turn, first, it's very clear that intersection will be allowed to deteriorate in traffic operations and become a sore for the entire community there and all people who are using that corridor. Secondly, the other alternatives are going to be adding lanes as well. They are going to be adding left turn lane on all three or four approaches. So I don't see any significant difference in terms of the safety and operation of bicyclists and pedestrians to use an excuse to kill this project. I would understand that if DOT might, you know, push back on this project or be amenable to kill this alternative because of the cost. It will cost them a lot more. And it costs a lot more because it's the best alternative. It gives the best and most benefit. And for pedestrians, whether they are crossing longer, the intersection becomes a little larger for them to cross. This is a signalized intersection, and they will have the signal, pedestrian signal phase extended as needed to make sure that they will be able to cross safely. So with this, I want to reiterate that, unfortunately, I cannot support that resolution, even with some of the changes that are being now debated. I cannot support it because it clearly supports the elimination and disregard of this partially displaced left turn designed for the intersection of Atlantic Avenue and Jog Road. Again, I think that we need to take this resolution back and have the consultants go back and look also at a compromise in the design, cross-section design, to provide for shared pathway, bicycle facilities on both sides without the on-street bike lane, but with provisions for marking and designation of vehicular lanes for bicycle use during off-peak periods or holidays, etc. And that's it. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Okay, Maria.
Okay, after all of the discussion, I'm trying to understand exactly what it is that the report, the FDOT report, is recommending or not recommending, or what are the options. I understand we have options for the typical section. For those, I would like to know if there is any information about benefit costs. Is that included in the report, and how was that? I mean, I didn't see anything in the presentation, but is that included, or is this an open-ended, these are options 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or whatever? And then for the intersection, I'm not really sure. I mean, I saw one intersection, they said, we analyzed something and determined that even with the do nothing, or I think they had two other alternatives, maintaining the dual left or adding triple left, it doesn't mean level of service. So are there any recommendations, anything? I'm trying to understand exactly what it is that the report is presenting. And once I get that, I mean, I think it's going to be easier for us to understand what the support means, because if I read this correctly, for the typical section, for the to provide the shared use path, and I seem to agree that a lot of the bikers go on the road. So even if you don't have a bike lane, they will try to go on the road. I do not feel comfortable saying that, oh, okay, you know that you have the right to be on the road, so you can be on the road even though I'm not gonna give you your own bike lane. When that happens in a road that is 45 miles per hour, I don't know who will even be brave enough to get there. But I think, I mean, I think at some point the bike needs to have their own right of way, just as the pedestrians and the vehicles. But if I see that on the TPA support in number one, we are actually getting into, we're actually gonna need right of way in order to get that. However, for the jog road, we're saying we don't want to have any adverse impact to private land ownership rights. So I don't know if I'm reading this correctly, because I don't really know what the jog road intersection means. I cannot understand what that means. Just to finish, I think that we can always add another motion that the support is for either the 10-foot or the bike lanes. I don't know that would be even supported by the majority of the technical advisory committee, but that's something that we could, I mean, we can always change it, revise it, but that's it. Thanks.
Sure. So, Madam Chair, if I may, I did want to make a correction. So the resolution is to for the PAC to basically make a stance on the project typical itself, and it is with that shared use pathway in lieu of on-street bike lanes. And the reason why that language is in there is because the on-street bike lanes, or the unprotected bike lanes on street on a 6-lane roadway of speeds of 45 miles an hour, that concept was rejected by our board, and that's why we had asked DOT to go back and look at some alternatives for us to address the board's concern. So that's that's where this resolution is coming from. And that's why we were asking for the TAC to take a stance on that. That being said, you know, if the TAC wants to make a modification to this, you know, they can. I just wanted to bring up that the board rejected the idea of at least unprotected bike lanes on a 6-lane roadway with speeds of 45 miles an hour. So I just wanted to make that clarification before we go forward. I think I may have caused some confusion there. So I apologize for that.
Thank you, Connor. John?
Mo, and my project team can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the extra width that you're talking about is due to the definition of what a shared use path is in the Florida Design Manual, where if we provide a shared use path, we have to provide additional buffer width on both sides of that shared use path. In addition, so it's not just the extra pavement, but it's additional buffer width on both sides. So by providing shared use paths on the north and the south, we're now adding additional 2 feet on each side of the path on the north and the south, which makes up the 8 feet. Is that correct, Took?
Yeah, it's the clear on both sides, which gives you the 8.
Thank you. Yeah, 4 on the front, 4 on the back, and additional 2 foot level for tying down to existing grade.
And utilities.
So that addresses that. In regards to the resolution itself, if the TAC is going to make a substitution of language, there's a couple things that I would like to point out from the DOT's perspective, which this particular resolution might complicate going forward. So, you know, not to disregard, you know, obviously this is recommending a very specific typical section. So I would expect the TAC to decide whether or not they want to recommend just moving, allowing DOT to consider that typical section with the others or specifically that typical section. The second part of 2A speaks to the project to the west, which is not part of this PD&E study. So I would recommend also, if the TAC wants to consider language that suggests DOT consider modifications to the entire corridor where they can, that's one thing, but to include a typical section that is specifically incorporated into another project, I don't think is a wise decision. I think it complicates matters and could affect the production schedule of another high priority project that's already in design and construction. Well, not construction, but already in design and funded for construction. And this could potentially affect that. So making a recommendation from the technical committee to the board, all those implications need to be considered as it goes to the board. So if you're going to make a substitution language to A, you may want to try to separate that out. For B, I would just ask for additional guidance from this group for the PD&E design team. It says, you know, I guess both Maria and Mo have spoken to what does it mean to affect private ownership rights. This particular language says eliminate components to build alternatives that have significant adverse impacts to pedestrian safety, bicycle safety, and private land. I think the team itself would need a little bit more guidance onto what that means. Does that mean buying no right-of-way whatsoever in this intersection? Or are we okay with, you know, DOT's NEPA definitions of what adverse impacts are? So significant in NEPA is a very high bar. And frankly, none of the alternatives that we've considered to date, I think would probably pass that significant test. So I would suggest that the TAC think about revising the language of B to be more in line with what guidance we would want to give to the board from a technical standpoint. What types of impacts are we prohibiting? Does it mean providing an extra turn lane as having a negative impact on safety and bicycle safety? So those are the types of considerations that I would hope this group would take into effect as it looks to revise the language if it does.
Madam Chair, I did have Alex, Gary, and Vicky with their hands raised.
Okay, Vicky?
Well, I thought I lowered it again, but as long as you've invited me, and this may seem trivial, I was wondering, will there be shade tree landscaping along these paths? It seems maybe superfluous, but you know, it mitigates, helps to mitigate impacts of climate change. It definitely is more commodious for users, and it also mitigates some of the pollution that comes from cars, which car exhaust is a known carcinogen. So I was just wondering about that. It may not be part of this, but would it be something that would be included later? Thank you.
You have an answer for her?
Vicky, I think that the typical section provided would not necessarily accommodate shade trees. My understanding is shade trees would have a significant diameter, and the right-of-way that is posed in those typical sections wouldn't necessarily accommodate shade trees. Certainly landscaping will be included as part of the project, but, and again, I would ask Took to correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my understanding.
And that was my guess, but thank you, John.
Thank you. Gary?
I took my hand down too, but I just wanted to, since I have this opportunity, I wanted to thank Mo for his comments. I didn't think anybody out there was thinking about this project the exact same way I was, but Mo perfectly stated every one of my concerns and thoughts. And so thank you, Mo, and I will voting as you do and vote no.
Okay, thank you. Alex?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to some of the comments or statements that Mo made. First, I think that the idea of prohibiting cyclists or limiting cyclists to off-peak hours or weekend is not only impractical, but I would even argue the legality of that, saying you cyclists cannot use this facility certain times of the day. So I would question that. And I'm not sure how it could even be implemented. We're going to have police officers ticketing cyclists if they're riding it at outside of those hours. I mean, again, I just question that idea. Second, I do want to make, and I'm somebody who cycles almost every week, and sometimes I use bicycle lanes, sometimes I may go on an off-road or facility. For example, one of the options that is being provided, again, includes 10-foot wide sidewalks, pathways, which is only a difference of 2 feet from the other option that then removes the on-street bicycle facility. So to me, at least that one still provides on-street options for cyclists, which again would be a lot safer while still having a 10-foot wide pathway that could be used both by pedestrians as well as cyclists who may not feel comfortable riding on the on-street bicycle facility. So at least that, I think, provides, and whether that is a perfect compromise, I'm not sure, but I think that does provide that compromise. 10-foot wide facilities are pretty accommodating for both cyclists and pedestrians, especially in an area in which I don't think we're talking about thousands of pedestrians there or thousands of cyclists. So that may be, I think, the best option. Then I am a little bit surprised to hear the director of an agency that has been building on-street bicycle facilities in the last few years indicate that cyclists should not be riding on the street. Again, the county has provided facilities on a number of roads, including Jog Road, that have fairly high speeds. So I find that a little bit contradictory or ironic, again, because the county has been providing for the last few years on-road bicycle facilities in a number of county roads. But again, as I indicated earlier, I think that any option that is recommended by this committee should include some type of on-road bicycle facility. Otherwise, we're putting a lot of people at risk, not only the cyclists who are going to continue to use this road, but even the drivers who are now going to be having to deal with cyclists right there on the vehicular travel lane.
Okay, thank you very much, Alex. Do we have any more raised hands?
I have Chang Jen and then Mo.
And then who?
Mo.
Oh, CJ.
Oh, thank you. I have a hard time understanding if you feel that it is unsafe to ride a bicycle on the existing bike lane, how would for bikers to share the road, even during the off-peak, make you feel safe? So I because of the speed differential, even off the peak, you ride the doing the shuttle operation on the 45 miles per hour road, not only will impede the traffic operations for the vehicular traffic, but also put the biker at the risk, great risk, because of the speed differential. I believe if we were to preserve the on-street bicycle lane facility, definitely the separated bike lane would be a good compromise that it can provide the facility for the professional bikers who bike faster, 20 miles per hour, 15 to 20 miles per hour for the regular, for the entertainment biker or casual bikers, or even the children, they can ride on the shared use path. So that I think it's a good compromise solution for the pedestrian and as well as the bikers. In terms of the intersection operations, I really think the crossover, like I mentioned in last meeting, is ultimate alternative intersection design solutions. However, if it's involved too much right away, it becomes infeasible. I was also heard that if it's a residential property got condemned, it actually does not compensate much. Okay. And some of the residents do have the settlemental issue moving, and as the public agency forcing them to moving from their home, to me, is sort of impractical considerations. There are other alternative intersection design, may not have as much as comparable effectiveness as the crossover, but they are worth considering as well. I think if you carefully consider those alternative intersection designs, such as downstream section, the turning. I'm just take it as an example. After the evaluation, I guess we can find if it is the solutions compared to existing intersection the operations.
Thank you, CJ. Mo?
Yeah, thank you, Kara. I just want to reiterate on what Alex said about my position on the bike lanes on street and or off street. Yes, our now cross section does provide for bicycle lanes as an our typical standard, but that does not mean that we have to continue doing it the same way we have been doing it. Because we were doing it that way, you should not be appalled that the leader of the agency now thinks that we need to change. This is how you modernize. This is how you evolve. So there's nothing wrong with that. You learn from your experience and you change, you adapt accordingly. So that's to answer Alex's point. I want also to answer what CJ said. And I agree with you, CJ. It's still not safe for bicyclists to be on the street on multi-lane, high-volume, high-speed facility. And the option would be provided and available for the bicyclists to use the shared use off-road facility. But if they insist and they still want to be on the street, they can utilize the state statute that allows them to be on the, I think the state statutes need to be probably amended, because currently it says that in the absence of a designated bicycle lane, they can use a vehicular lane. So again, it's a choice. You can provide for them the facility to be off the road, but if they want to choose to be on the road because of their own needs, then they have that option. And again, as I said, it will be encouraged at least to be utilized outside the peak periods. And that answers Alex's issue as well about, you know, legality and no legality. This is a new idea that is thrown out. As with any new ideas, it needs to be scrutinized and debated, and to find out what are the challenges, what are the things that need to be done for this idea to be implemented and or not. So these are details that are not worth, you know, to be discussed at this point. The merit of the issue is to look at whether that concept or that idea, you know, has merit and has, you know, value. One more thing I want to point out about the environmental impact. We talk about the environment all the time, but we forget that, you know, by embracing alternative designs that deteriorate the liver service and the traffic flow, they inadvertently, you know, increase the negative impact on our environment by, you know, allowing vehicles to linger on the road for longer periods of time and spew a lot more of their venomous gases into the air. So we need to keep that in mind. That's why, you know, alternative designs that provide for better traffic flow are environmentally friendly. They have big environmental, you know, advantage. So now I want to talk about the alternative design that CJ brought up, you know, with impact, no impact. CJ, to your, you should probably, you know, this, that when we, and we have to use the eminent domain, which most of the times we don't have to. Almost 99.9% of the times, property owners are happy with, you know, just giving up property. When we go and condemn, we go in front of a judge. And the judge, we have to prove to the judge without any doubt that what we are proposing is to the best interest of the public. And there is no other alternative that would be available that would provide the same benefit and or the benefit is significant and necessary. So we need, again, not to mislead into giving the impression that people are being put at disadvantage because the government is so aggressive and is disregarding their interests and or sentiments, et cetera. That doesn't happen. The process is lengthy, and especially with the state. When the state, you know, does acquire right of way, they have even much more stringent protocol that they have to go through. And it gives, you know, much more advantage to property owners in that respect. And with the other alternatives that CJ was bringing up that, you know, could be, you know, not as good, but they are good enough. I remember, you know, the design team did go through this process early on when they evaluated all the alternatives. And if I remember correctly, none of the other alternatives even come close to providing the adopted and desired level of service. So this, we are past that stage. And I think we know very clearly now at this point that this partially displaced left turn alternative is by far the best in terms of providing for traffic flow and mobility, and I believe safety as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mo. Do we have any other raised hands? Okay, then I'm gonna come
back
to Maria.
I lied, CJ and Jim.
Okay, CJ?
On my turn, okay. Thank you. Quickly, if all the alternative has been evaluated, and 39, or any other tech member miss that information, I wish the design team can at least present that. All the evaluation for all the alternative in the section design alternative to the tech members, in order for us to recognize that is the fact that no other solutions other than the express or crossover section will work. Would demand that information be presented before we make that call.
Okay. You had one other raised hand.
I had, I had Jim Bell, but he lowered his hand.
Okay.
Wait, no, I accidentally lowered it.
Okay, so Jim.
Yes. I just want to expound on what Vicky spoke about with the street trees or shade trees. I'd like to see in the future any design that FDOT has for these roadways that would have a shoulder or swale, that there could be some sort of street trees, preferably shade trees, obviously, also shown in the design. I mean, these trees would provide the safety for the walking and the biking, and hopefully encourage more walking and biking and maybe take some trips off the road. I guess that could happen or not happen, but it just would provide a nice buffer from pedestrians and possibly make people want to be able to use the bicyclists to use the sidewalk or the shared pathway, or however it's going to be designed. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, so we have a motion on the floor from Maria, but I believe, Maria, you need to clarify your motion.
Okay, based on the discussion that we have had, I feel uncomfortable at this time to make the motion. So I'm not making that motion.
So you're withdrawing your motion?
Yes.
All right, so the next step would be to ask for a motion. So right now before you is, we're looking for a motion to recommend adoption of resolution affirming TPA support for the Atlantic Avenue Widening Project from Florida's Turnpike to Jog Road. This has been discussed, it was shown to you, resolution was provided in your packet. Do I have a motion from anyone, whether they want to modify or make recommendation?
I think, sorry about this, this is Mo.
I have some hands raised. I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Okay, then.
So I have Mo, I think Mike had was going to unmute, and then Vicky and Kim Delaney.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Kira, can I talk?
You have a comment, or are you...
I have a comment. I think it's premature or not practical to try to come with a resolution or a motion and vote on to support a resolution that has so many competing elements in it. So I think almost the majority of us have feelings and issues with one or other component of the resolution. So if there will be any motion, probably it will be motion on its own, not simply support or not support or modify the resolution, because again, the resolution is a package of so multitude of elements that members may have different positions towards. Thank you.
Thank you, correct. Okay, so next, Kim Delaney.
Kim.
Hey guys, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Super. So, you know, I think the extent of detailed discussion on this issue really helped highlight the level of transition, I think, that we're in as a region in trying to grapple with the desire to provide safe and appropriate facilities that move as many members of the traveling public as safely as possible, and the realization of how insufficient our facilities have been to accommodate safe bicyclists in particular. I mean, that's really the focus. So pedestrians can move safely in a 6-foot or 8-foot or 10-foot sidewalk that's grade separated fairly well, you know, aside from folks that use those facilities inappropriately, step out in front of moving traffic, for example, at a crosswalk. But it's the bicyclists that have really unfortunately taken the brunt of impact from the disconnect between roadway facilities where cars are supposed to move at not more than 35 miles an hour, right? But we know that roads that are marked 40 or 50 or 55 miles an hour, drivers are moving faster than that. So bicyclists just don't have a chance when they're in an on-road facility, whether it's a 5-foot bike lane or 5-foot bike lane with a 2-foot buffer or a 5-foot bike lane with a 3-foot buffer. You know, I think the realization that we've arrived upon, and this is based on the council's, you know, participation in lots of projects around the region, lead us to conclusions where we have policy boards like the TPA saying it's not okay to have on-road facilities for bicyclists where we have speeds that are in excess of 35 miles an hour, even if they're buffered. And that's, I think, the intent of what the policy intent is of the resolution that we have. So you know, I'm trying to bring us to a conclusion point as a TAC. What I would suggest is to John Crane's point earlier, a resolution that calls out a policy recommendation on a specific corridor like this one creates the potential for conflict, and I think that makes sense. It seems as though the policy direction from the TPA board is separate facilities completely, and where we have fast-moving roads, even a buffered bike lane isn't enough. And so listening to the discussion, and I know it's to the chagrin of the on-road cyclists, what we would suggest, and perhaps the policy direction is, you know, moving towards a circumstance where the default condition is a 10-foot grade separated pathway that is wide enough and safe enough to accommodate two-way bike traffic in the absence of an on-road facility when we have speeds that are 35 miles an hour or greater. The only addition to that I would suggest based on the discussion is adding some shade trees where that landscape buffer can be added. And it becomes more expensive to do that. But that's really what creates a functional bike network when we look around the country at places that have actually done that well. And so I will offer a resolution suggestion, so in the form of a motion, because that's where we're supposed to go. And it's okay if it's defeated, but I'm just trying to bring us to a point of closure on a very spicy topic. But that said, perhaps a motion that would read something like this, right? Which is the TAC move to approve a resolution that's slightly modified that would aim towards a recommended typical section for roadways that are and that are designed with posted speeds of 35 miles or greater, that the typical section be an off-road shared use pathway of at least 10 feet in width in lieu of an on-street bicycle lane, with landscape buffers where right-of-way can be secured, period. And not just include that typical section for Atlantic Avenue specifically, but that be the requested typical section consistent with the TPA governing board's direction, and I think our user experience as multimodal users in the network. I'll make that motion.
Kim has a motion. Do I get a second?
Second.
Who was that?
That was me, Aaron.
Thank you. Aaron Hoffman, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Aaron. Okay, I just have two more comments. Mike? No? Who else has a raised hand?
I'm sorry, I muted myself. I have John Crane.
John.
So this is not discussion on the motion, right?
Okay,
so yeah. I was going to proffer that perhaps we withdraw a resolution and recommendation at this time. We don't present at the October board meeting per se a recommendation from this group, and that we DOT and our design team kind of work with the staff, continue to work with the staff, and come back in December for the board and TAC with a more, I guess, with a different resolution that reflects hopefully the guidance and direction from the TAC that we've heard today, the staff comments, and any discussion that occurs at the board meeting coming up in October related to the project. So maybe as a potential alternative to the motion for moving forward.
Okay. So I'm just going to look for direction. Who's putting forward the resolution? Is it from FDOT? And
it's a TPA resolution that we put on your agenda.
Okay. All right.
Sarah, I'm happy to withdraw my motion to allow DOT to work through those alternatives and bring back a revised resolution that's a staff recommended resolution. I'm happy to withdraw the motion for that to happen.
Okay. Would you like to make an alternative motion to that effect?
I don't think a motion is necessary at this point in time based on John's suggestion. It's okay. Kind of like a let cooler heads prevail moment, because we're at a heated point of discussion on this. And this is tricky stuff. This is hard. You know, we're in an evolving region that's dealing with a lot of strife. And so this just happens to be maybe a tipping point, right? So we have those tipping points, and this project might be the tipping point. So again, happy to withdraw the motion. I don't think a motion is necessary based on that offer by DOT, which is gracious and appropriate, I think, given the discussion today, to allow some more analysis. If there's not a time pressure on a decision by the TAC, that sounds like a great alternative.
Madam Chair, if I may,
yes,
if Kim's withdrawing her motion, then there's no motion on the floor. I will still need, per Robert's rules of order, someone to make a motion to postpone, and as FDOT requested, postpone it till the December meeting to allow more time for staff coordination. FDOT is a advisory member and they're non-voting, so they cannot make a motion.
I can make a motion.
Okay.
Okay.
Go. Okay.
I second.
Very good. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Okay. We are done. Thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair. So I have a motion by Mo and a second by Maria to postpone to our December meeting.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and then we can take this one as a voice and not a roll call.
Okay, please. We have a motion by Mo and a second by Maria to postpone. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Okay. Thank you very much. Next item is C, a motion to recommend approval of the 2022 Local Initiatives and State Road Modification SRM Program Guidelines and Scoring System. I'd like to invite Jason and Connor to present this item.
Good morning, everyone. So today I'm going to present to you with Connor the TPA grant programs for the fiscal year 2022 grant application cycle. I'll cover the local initiatives grant program and Connor will cover the state road modifications program. And to begin, I'll start with going over the proposed dates for this upcoming cycle. So the program will kick off on October 21st at the TPA governing board meeting when they officially adopt the scoring system and the program overviews for all three programs. And then immediately after that, the following week, we'll do a program kickoff workshop on the 26th, where we'll invite all participants to attend either virtually or at the TPA offices. We do have some limited capacities to accommodate people here in person, but we will record it and then stream it live, as well as post it after the workshop to get the additional information after it's concluded. Following that, as we did last year, there's a pre-application meeting that's required, and that'll go from November 1st to January 31st, where applicants will schedule a meeting to come in and discuss the project in more detail in a one-on-one meeting with FDOT and TPA. And then the application deadline is February 18th. That'll be the conclusion of the application cycle for applicants to apply. And then following that, we'll go through the vetting process, and those projects will, the selected projects will end up in the draft priority list of projects. And that's when you'll see them again as the ranked prioritized projects, as the list of projects, and that'll be in July, 2022. And then we'll provide that list of projects once they're adopted to FDOT in the same month of July. And then the last bullet here, we're requesting and asking all applicants that receive funding through the TPA to incorporate the project that they receive funding for in their capital improvement programs to identify the local funding that is to be applied towards that project in addition to the TPA funding, just to acknowledge that they're aware of the project and they've programmed the funds required to implement the project. Now I'll go over the first program is the Local Initiatives Program, and this has been in existence for a while. It accommodates non-regionally significant projects that include complete streets projects, capital transit capital projects like electric buses or new rolling stock for SFRTA, complete streets projects and non-motorized projects such as filling gaps for sidewalks, for bicycle lanes, or improving intersections, as well as freight infrastructure. And the guidelines for the funds, or at least the timeline, is the application submittal cycle will end on February 18th. If you're successful in getting funds from the TPA, the design funds become available in 2025, and the construction funds will follow at 2027. So that's the kind of the layout of the funds that would become available if you're successful with a grant application for local initiatives. Now there was a few program scoring changes to go over from last year, and that is we've removed the bicycle and pedestrian length point multiplier that we saw last year. It constrained a few of the projects that were over 2 miles. So there already is a cap of a maximum of 10 points. So there was no real need to limit the length of the funds because there's already a cap in the number of points that you can receive. The next change is we've also added as the preferred facility type of 5 points is the 10-foot shared use path. As we discussed in the previous presentation that you saw, we're gearing, we're kind of advocating for 10-foot shared use paths as a as the preferred alternative or the desired kind of infrastructure that we'd like to see built and applied for. So we've structured the points to reflect that. The next change is we've updated the traditionally underserved index based on best practices. And through these best practices, you'll see on the next slide that we've incorporated a lot more indexes. And that's that includes racial minority, ethnic minority, below poverty, limited English proficiency, persons with disabilities, elder, youth, and a few more on the bottom here. So all those are incorporated and rolled into what makes up the traditionally underserved index. So it's more comprehensive, it's more in line with best practices. And so we've made that change to reflect in the scoring system. And these changes cut across all three programs, the transportation alternatives, the local initiatives, and the state road modifications grant programs. So with that, that covers the local initiatives, the program overview, and some of the scoring changes. Now I'll turn it over to Connor, and he'll go over the state road modifications program, which is somewhat new this year. So take it away, Connor.
Thank you, Jason. Now, before I get started into the actual presentation, I think it's important to provide some background on where we are today with the state road modifications program. So this program, it's actually been around for a few years now. However, it's not been a formalized process. The TPA sought to address this by adding some goals into our strategic plan. The goals being to one, create a scoring system for SRM, and two, support applications for the new program. As part of the adoption of the strategic plan, the TAC voted to develop a subcommittee to help inform the formalization of this process. And the subcommittee met on September 8th and voted to move forward with the TPA's recommendation with a few changes, which I will touch on a little bit later in this presentation. TPA staff incorporated the recommendations from the subcommittee, and the program is now seeking to host an annual application process similar to TA and LI. Now for the program itself, it is modeled after the LI and TA programs. And because of this, it'll follow the same schedule that Jason highlighted earlier. The program is intended to fund projects on state roadways, and it will be funding things like complete streets projects, traffic calming, intersection improvements, and things along those lines. The program has about $20 million available to it with a $5 million cap and a $500,000 minimum per project. I think I lost the presentation. Margie, am I able to?
Yes, you should be able to, Connor. I'm not sure why it's doing that. I'll control the slides.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. All right. So so moving forward, there are two types of projects that can be submitted through SRM. So there is essentially standalone projects, and that's going to be similar to what you see in LI and TA, where it's a brand new project in a roadway section that doesn't really have any other projects being programmed in it. The other is modifications to existing projects. And this is where the submitting agency seeks to enhance, say, a RRR project that DOT is doing. So a resurfacing job, and they want to add bike lanes or sidewalk to that resurfacing job. So that would fall into that second category. Next slide, please. Okay. Now, getting into the scoring portion of it, a lot of this is going to look very familiar because, again, it's modeled after the LI and TA programs. And especially for the first section here, this is going to look very familiar because it's no difference between the LI scoring and it also incorporates the new changes that Jason just highlighted into the pedestrian and bicycle facility types. Next slide, please. Here you can see the incorporation of the traditionally underserved metric, but you can also see the scoring kind of diverge a bit from the LI scoring to better match the goals of SRM, the program, and the direction of our subcommittee. We have incorporated both target speed as well as crash reduction factors into the scoring, which you can kind of see in the bottom two rows there. Next slide, please. And wrapping up the scoring with the final section, you can see the new scoring criteria added to the third row from the top. We wanted to give points to projects that essentially maximize TPA funds. And that's done through assigning 5 points to projects which modify existing FDOT resurfacing projects. Next slide, please. And finally, and Jason kind of went over these dates earlier in the presentation, but I wanted to show you the flyer for the upcoming grant workshop, as well as a save the date for the application due date. So the workshop, again, is going to be on October 26, 2021. From 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And the application due date this year will be February 18th, 2022 at 5 p.m. And if you are looking for more information on the funding programs that we have here at the TPA, you can visit palmbeachtpa.org/funding. And that is all I have for you today. Thank you.
Staff, are there any public comments on this?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, I need a motion to recommend approval of the 2022 LI NSRM program guidelines and scoring system, and then I'll open the floor to discussion.
I move.
I second.
Okay, I believe I had Kim Delaney followed by and seconded by Maria Tahara.
Okay.
And then I do have Mo and Vicki Gitanis with their hands raised.
Okay, Vicki?
I didn't get all the dates, so I'm just wondering, I assume it'll be on the website?
So there's, so in the backup, there's actually the overview, which will have a more comprehensive list of dates as well. So there'll be additional dates in there, but I think they brought up the general dates on the slide for you there.
Okay, thank you.
Mo?
Yeah, thank you. I have a question about the scoring for the LI. I was wondering if we could add, hold on. You can hear me, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay, because I had a message to unmute myself. Yeah, I had a question about whether we could add give points to in the LI application to projects that fill gaps in a sidewalk or pathway system, helping to create a connected longer system, and then give more scores based on the length of the entire system that will be connected as a result of those gaps being filled. I'm working on a project here in Palm Beach County that will be extensive, and it fits that category. We have quite a few gaps that we need to fill in the corridor, but once we do that, then we'll be able to provide a fully connected pathway that would connect residential to shopping and parks and entertainment, as well as provide a fully connected, maybe 3 mile long corridor. So I wonder if this is the time and whether that's a good idea, if the group feels it's a good idea to add that as one of the criteria to be scored upon. And also I had another question, since I have the time to speak, about the SRM. So this is a unique program for Palm Beach TPA, or this is a statewide program. And also I see that the TPA can have the option of applying for up to five, submitting up to five applications. The question is, I understand that municipalities and or county, each will be applying for corridors within their jurisdiction. So what's the jurisdiction for the TPA? So that will be anywhere. And would there be any coordination between them and the jurisdiction where that project is located? That's it. Thank you. I think I asked several questions.
Okay. For the local initiatives, you're specifically asking for to carve out points for filling gaps in a sidewalk network.
Yeah, that would create not any filling gaps. Filling gaps that would create collectively a longer connected network of sidewalks or corridor of sidewalks, or whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Well, there's not currently points directly for kind of filling gaps for a connected sidewalk system, but I can certainly make note of that. And then we could see if we could fit that into the next round for next year's cycle of incorporating something like that. However, by taking off the maximum, the point multiplier for the length of the facility, if it is 3 miles long, or if you're doing 3 miles of a network, whether it's bicycle or sidewalks, you wouldn't lose points being over 2 miles. And that was one of the limiting factors that we saw in last round, where I think it was Prosperity Farms, where there was two segments and it was over 2 miles, but we are limited to giving points up to 2 miles. And so, but the 10-point maximum was still reached, so the maximum amount of points was received. But
Jason?
Yes.
If I, just as a point, I think it's good that we're considering, I think it's part of what you do in your justification, or when you put in a project, is you describe things like that, which are of a benefit. I don't know that it's appropriate for a member to ask for the criteria to be changed based on a project they're saying they're going to submit. I don't know that it's appropriate.
Why is it not appropriate?
Well, you're saying you're going to submit a project and you want to change the criteria to benefit that project that's coming. I don't.
Yeah. So, because this is a need. This is a need, and this is something that, you know, would be applicable elsewhere within the county. It's not going to be unique to the county.
I'm not disagreeing with
you
that.
You may find. Yeah.
No, I don't disagree, but I'm saying part of your justification that will be in there, but I don't know that we should provide additional criteria to accommodate an upcoming, other than everybody would want to do that at the meeting. That would just be my point.
Yeah, it would be up to the group collectively to change the scoring system to accommodate it, but I hear the point. I think it's valid. It's something we could look forward to in the next cycle of how can we accommodate points to fill gaps in it, to create a connected system, because it's not building a long length of facility, but it's kind of filling in gaps to a system. And so is there a way to accommodate that? And at this current, with the current cycle, with the scoring the way that it is, you would just package as many of the gaps as possible to establish enough length for it to be competitive with other applications that may be several miles of length of a sidewalk, whereas this might be small segments, but multiple small segments to fill a gap, or, you know, to create a connected system.
Okay. Thank you.
And you had a question on SRM. I don't know if Connor, if you had anything to chime in for that.
Sure. Yeah. So, I just wanted to make sure that I'm answering your question correctly. It was why is the, or how is the TPA submitting projects for SRM if they don't have any jurisdiction? Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And whether, okay, and whether if it's going to be anywhere, if they will be obliged to coordinate with the local agency or government that within which the project is located.
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah. So the SRM program has actually been around for a couple of years now, and both DOT and TPA staff, or the TPA, as well as a couple cities, have submitted projects through the SRM program in the past. So the way it works for the TPA is that, say, there's a project in the city of Boca that is identified in our long-range transportation plan or a different study that we see is in need. We would coordinate both with DOT and the city of Boca to get them all to agree on a, say, a typical section or something like that. And then the TPA would just submit that project on behalf of pretty much the city and DOT to get that into the SRM program. And it would still have to meet all the same criteria that all other projects submitted through SRM would have to meet. So essentially, we would just be coordinating with the local jurisdictional owners and making sure that they're good with what is being proposed and then pursuing the project through that way.
But thank you. Even though that would, could be redundant, but that as long as the coordination is happening, that's fine. Thank you.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we wanted to open that up too is because some of the smaller cities, especially that may have small sections of DOT roadways going through it, we wanted to make sure that TPA staff was available to submit projects so that if it's a smaller staff, they're not able to do it, we want to still keep that option open.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Yep. Any other comments?
I did have another hand raised, but they lowered it, so I don't have any.
Okay. Hearing no further discussion, I have a motion by Kim Delaney and a second by Maria Tejera. We're going to do this vote by roll call. Margie, please call the roll.
So just to be clear, the motion on the floor is to recommend approval of the 2022 local initiatives and state road modification program guidelines and system scoring as presented. And just a reminder to unmute yourself when I call your name and either a yes or no for your vote. Jim Bell?
Yes.
Maria Tejera? And Maria may have left the meeting already, so I will mark her as, yeah, she did leave the meeting. So I'll mark her as absent. Gary Dunmire?
Yes.
Richard Pereira?
Yes.
Kenny Wilson?
Yes.
Chang Jen Lan?
Yes.
Jamie Brown?
Yes.
Michael Morrow?
Yes.
Aramis Cabrera?
Yes.
Will Hicks?
Yes.
Brian Davis?
Yes.
Anna Bulowska?
Yes.
Aaron Hoffman?
Yes.
Terrence Bailey? I'm sorry, Terrence, was that a yes?
Yes, that was a yes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, it's a little bit harder to hear you. Christopher Marsh?
Yes.
Joyce Kai?
Yes.
Vicky Gatanis?
Yes.
Kim Delaney?
Yes.
Patrick Bartholomew? Hello?
Yes.
Alex Hansen?
Yes.
Christine Perdomo?
Yes.
Motor Samal Turk?
Yes.
Kara Ferris?
Yes.
It passes unanimously, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, moving on, a motion to recommend adoption of the resolution requesting timely submittal of FDOT's fiscal year 2023 through 2027 draft tentative work program to the TPA. I'd like to invite Connor to present this item, followed by FDOT staff.
Thing and thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to give a brief introduction to what this action item is. So, action item B, as mentioned, is a resolution requesting timely submittal of FDOT's draft tentative work program to the TPA. FDOT was not able to compile and provide either the district or turnpike draft tentative work program in time for inclusion in the agenda packet, Although we do have the Turnpike's list of projects here today, and there'll be a presentation on that, but still have not received the district's draft tentative work program to date. Since TPA staff and committee members cannot thoroughly review the projects and funding prior to approval, it does not allow for a collaborative process between partners. Attached is the draft resolution, as seen on the screen, requesting the timely submittal to the TPA to facilitate the thorough review process. So with that, I guess I'll pass it over to DOT staff, I believe is up next.
Hi, this is John Crane. I just wanted to make a couple comments about the resolution for the TPA TAC here. We at the district, you know, I didn't want it to look like the district just holding back information. I wanted them to understand the process a little bit, but so we are not able to release the draft tentative work program at the district until we receive our appropriations from our central office. And then we go ahead and rebalance our work program. And what does that mean? Every year we update our long range estimates for each of our projects. And the project that was in the upcoming first year of the work program, all those projects, some go up, some go down, and we have to make sure we fund committed projects. So we go through that process on a year by year basis using your priorities from the TPA to guide us in that process. And we do work collaboratively with staff as best we can during that process when we're balancing the work program. And in fact, we're been going through that balancing process even as we speak. Also, for those who are new to the process, we have what's called a short cycle and a regular cycle that is related to when the legislation, the legislative session begins. The regular cycle is in March, early cycle is in January. And so we are required to provide the draft tentative work program to the legislative sessions. And this year on an early cycle, we have to provide it on November 4th. So about a year ago in late November and early December, we were made aware of this window of opportunity to that we were going to receive our appropriations and be able to turn around a draft tentative work program. We provided the TPA the date or the window that we would hope to be able to release that, which is October 11th. And we're happy to report that we will be able to release that on October 11th. So we weren't able to provide it to the TPA TAC. However, we did suggest or request and as a collaborative process as best we could that maybe the TPA would want to adjust its October meeting schedule to occur during the last 2 weeks of October, since we knew we were targeting October 11th for the release of that information. So I would just posit that we do our best to be collaborative with the TPA during the release of the draft tentative work program. And with that, I'm going to allow the Turnpike first to present their information and then District 4, while we don't have a draft tentative work program to present today, we would like to take this opportunity to at least give you a status update of where we're at and where we see the balancing of the major projects happening and what we've been able to accomplish and understand so far, if that would be okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Morning. Microphone on. Thank you, Margie. Victoria Williams, I'm the Turnpike's liaison to the TPA and others in South Florida. Today we have our planning manager as well for Turnpike here, Carol Scott, in person. I want to thank you for this opportunity. We'll go through our tentative five-year work program. Advancing slides. Thank you. Let's take a look at the Turnpike system. I'd like to let you know that there are Turnpike facilities in six FDOT districts and 19 counties. In Palm Beach County, we've got a 30-mile stretch as we run through this region. Florida's Turnpike's mission is to help meet the state's growing transportation needs, ensuring value to customers, protecting investors, and managing this turnpike system in a business-like manner. With that mission in mind, the projects we'll discuss today support the Department of Transportation's vital few core areas, which are to improve safety, enhance mobility, and also inspire innovation. This slide will depict how Florida's Turnpike receives revenues and processes expenditures. Revenue is collected through user tolls and concessions at our service plazas. However, we don't receive any revenue from gas tax or other kind of tax income. According to the Turnpike bond covenants, we have to pay for operations and maintenance costs first. This includes costs to collect and process toll payments. Then we have to pay off the debt on those bonds that we issue to construct major projects. It should be noted that due to our very high credit rating, the Turnpike has historically benefited from some of the lowest borrowing costs in the toll industry. Then we'll reinvest that revenue into renewal and replacement of pavement, such as resurfacing projects or other kind of recurring improvement costs. Finally, we'll use the remaining funds to pay for capital improvements, such as widening or interchanges. So in that process, we do prioritize. Here's some information about our approach to prioritizing. We have various ways of determining how projects get funded. It does depend on the project type. All of our projects have to demonstrate a transportation need, and we prioritize accordingly. Widening and interchange projects are ranked in priority. Through an annual effort we take that looks at observed traffic data and then projects the future across the entire system. Expansion projects must meet environmental and economic feasibility as part of our prioritization process and, of course, stakeholder input. This is extremely important. It's considered throughout the entire project development process. So now we'll take a look at Palm Beach County. I believe that everyone has received a copy of our summary of projects in District 4. District 4 has, of course, several counties in it, but Palm Beach County is benefiting from about half of that, $2.1 billion. So we have two pages, two slides to show you information about Palm Beach County out of that District 4 summary of projects. We'll show you these two maps. We'll start at the bottom of the county and let you know that if you're looking at the District 4 summary of projects, we'll start on page 9 for Palm Beach County. So you'll see we've got West Palm Beach Service Plaza. We're going to continue to work on improving conditions there for car parking, truck parking, and the ramps. It's a very strong, highly utilized facility, that service plaza. Then going down into the interchange at Boynton Beach Boulevard, you'll see that we're gonna work on those northbound ramps and ramp terminals. We have a lot of great details about these projects in the summary of projects. So I'll just give you some overview here. The next item on this slide shows you the drainage effort we're making to stabilize the Lake Worth Drainage District Canal Bank. So we're constructing bulkhead walls. This is all a part of our preparation to support our widening project. And as you go down, you see widening, which is going to take us from north of Glades Road to that L38 canal. Also includes bridge replacement and widening the bridge over Clint Moore Road. Just to the south of this, we're adding auxiliary lanes. And that's the project you see that will go from the county line up to Glades Road. Then we'll talk about a partnership project. This is where we're working with District 4. They're taking the lead on widening the Beeline Highway 710, but we've got an interchange near there. So we're working to provide them with funding, $30 million there, to widen Beeline Highway at the bridge. It coincides with our widening project for that bridge replacement. Then you'll see a widening from north of Okeechobee Boulevard to Beeline Highway. This is pushed out to include, let me see here. Yeah, from Okeechobee to the Beeline Highway, $136 million. Then we've got widening from Southern Boulevard further south up to Okeechobee, a little north of Okeechobee. So in that span, we have two interchanges we're going to take a look at and work on, Jog Road and Okeechobee Boulevard. These are existing, but we're going to see ways to enhance them, make them operate a little better. Widening from West Palm Beach Service Plaza up to Southern Boulevard. That's shown as well on the map and on here. This will include improvements at Southern Boulevard itself. Well, in summary, I want to let you know we have a website and we'd be happy for you guys to take a look at what information we have available there. The fdot.gov, WPPH, will tell you some more information about the work programs. Thank you for your time. Any questions, let me know.
Madam Chair, did you want to take questions in between each presentation? I don't have any hands raised at this time and I don't have any public comments.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the next presentation.
Okay, good morning. My name is Jessica Rubio. I am the Program Management Administrator, and I'm here to present an update on the District 4 Work Program. So I'm gonna do an overview of how the process is about, and as a result of legislation, the Work Program cycle timeline alternates between a regular process and an accelerated cycle. This year, as John Crane mentioned, is an accelerated cycle because of an early legislative session, the start session January 11 next year. So we build the work program based on revenue estimates and funding allocations. The district starts receiving allocations during mid, late September of every year. And this assists us to identify the years on which the projects will be funded. It is a quick turnaround from the time the district receives the allocations to developing the draft tentative work program until we come here to present you with this update. This is an annual process, and the actual processes overlap with a cycle that kicks off in October, when we coordinate with the TPA to solicit new projects. The draft list of priority projects are submitted to the district on March 1st, and this allows the vetting process to begin. Between March and August, the department coordinates with the TPA and local agencies to determine if projects are viable and program ready. The district received the list of priority projects approved by the board prior to August 1st. Currently, as John mentioned, we are working on balancing the work program, and we plan to provide you with a draft of the tentative work program by October 11, which is next Monday. We also have scheduled a public hearing as required by law. It is scheduled, as it was mentioned earlier in this meeting, for Tuesday, October 19, beginning at 6:30. It will be conducted in the District 4 headquarters. However, we also have allowed virtual attendance through a webinar. The public hearing announcement was also released in the department's website, in also the department's social media. And as required by statute, we will also advertise it in the Florida Register. I believe Victoria has shown you the website from the DOT, which has been updated and now includes the information of the work program for each district. So District 4 will also be included in that website, and it will have a link to the what we used to call the citizens report. Now it will be called the draft tentative report. So you will be able to pull it from that website starting October 11. Upon completion of the various meetings, various public meetings, Central Office will compile all the district work program information and conduct a statewide public hearing. This will be conducted on January 10th, 2022. The secretary will adopt the work program on July 1st. This is the start of the fiscal year. We can report that this year, the District 4 work program is stable. This means that the allocations did not change significantly. So that is good news. As part of the process, we maintain construction and right-of-way estimates updated on an annual basis. Overall, we have seen that the estimates have been going up. However, our goal is to maintain the projects that were committed in the coming 4 years, and these projects that are prioritized are related to safety, preservation, and maintenance of roads and bridges. If new phases were programmed, they will be generally programmed in the fifth year of the draft tentative work program. So I can give you a status of some projects at this time, and I have great news. We were able to advance 3 projects into fiscal year 22 from fiscal year 23. We use ARPA funds, which is stimulus funds. And these projects are the intersection improvement project at the Cerro 80, Southern Boulevard at Australian Avenue. We also were able to increase the budgetary ceiling of a curve compliance push button contract related to safety. And auxiliary lane improvement to the southbound I-95 on ramp from PGA Boulevard. Also, we can update you on a couple more projects, and this is related to a State Road 80 lighting. As you may be aware, the cost estimates increased from last year, but the good news is that we were able to advance the funding of phase one into fiscal year 23. And this funding is partially done with the CARES Act funding. Phase two is funded for fiscal year 26. And the design team is currently coordinating with Florida Power and Light on how best we can implement the phases along the corridor. We also anticipate that we will be able to program several local initiatives and transportation alternative projects. This concludes my update. Thank you.
Okay, so we had our presentations. Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, so we do have a resolution before us. I need a motion to recommend adoption of a resolution requesting timely submittal of FDOT's fiscal year 2023-2027 draft tentative work program to the TPA, and then I will open the floor to discussion.
Madam Chair, I don't have any hands raised yet.
No hands raised. Okay. I don't have anyone putting forward a motion either.
No.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I second it.
Who was the second? I'm sorry.
Aaron.
Thank you. So I do have Vicki with her hand raised, followed by Mo.
Okay. Vicki?
I have the question. So section 2A, or B rather, request the district work program be submitted at least 2 weeks prior to the meetings. But I also heard John when he said, you know, the short cycle schedule is not within the district's ability to control. So I want to be fair to DOT while also, I understand from the TPA point of view and the TAC, you don't want to just get something rushed to you, you know, days before it has to be processed. That's wrong. But so I'm trying to think of, you know, what is fair given these sort of conflicting schedules. Maybe I understand it imperfectly, but, I don't know that Section 2B really allows for DOT's schedule. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Mo?
Thank you. It appears, I want to reiterate on what Vicky just said, it appears like that this issue could be coordinated and discussed between TPA staff at this point and FDOT to come to a resolution on how they can improve on that and make sure that we get that information in timely manner. Unless the TPA staff can tell us now that they have tried and they were ignored by FDOT, in that case, I would see the merit for this resolution. Otherwise, I feel that it is not conducive. I don't see any benefit from, you know, passing or supporting this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have any other hands raised?
Sorry, it would help if I had my microphone on. No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Just to say, this is a resolution requesting time. It's not a demand, it's a request. So I think it's well within your ability to say you want time to be able to review these things. So that being said, hearing no further discussion, I have a motion by Mike Morrow and a second by Aaron. We're going to do this vote by roll call. Margie, please call the roll.
Jim, I'm sorry, just to clarify, if you can please unmute your microphones and then respond by saying either yes or no when I call your name. So Jim Bell?
Yes.
Maria Tahara left, so she will be marked as absent. Gary Dunmire?
Yes.
Richard Pereira?
Yes.
Kenny Wilson?
Yes.
Chang Jen Lan?
Yes.
Jamie Brown?
Yes.
Michael Morrow?
Yes.
Aramis Cabrera?
Yes.
Will Hicks?
Yes.
Brian Davis?
Yes.
Anna Bielowska?
Yes.
Aaron Hoffman?
Yes.
Terrence Bailey? Terrence, are you still here? I will come back to him. Christopher Marsh?
Yes.
Joyce Kai?
Yes.
Vicky Gatanis?
Yes.
Kim Delaney? Kim?
Sorry, yes.
Thank you. Patrick Bartholomew?
Yes.
Alex Hansen?
Yes.
Christine Perdomo?
Yes.
And once again, Terrence Bailey?
Yes.
Thank you. Modus Amalturk?
No.
Kara Ferris?
Yes.
It passes with one opposed.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next is informational items, and there are no information items on the agenda. Next will be administrative items, FDOT scheduling report, October 2021. This is an informational item only. There will be no staff presentation unless requested by a committee member.
I have no public comments on this one, and I do not have any hands raised.
Okay. Next is the next meeting is December 1st, 2021. As a reminder, we have a scheduled break in November. So our next TAC meeting is scheduled for December 1st, 2021. At this time, our committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.